with Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Time now to talk Texans with ESPN Texans reporter DJ Bienemé. Brought to you by Houston Powder Coaters and the DraftKings Sportsbook at Golden Nugget Lake Charles.
Well, season's over. We've had now 5 days or so to reflect on what went wrong this past Saturday in Kansas City. Joining us right now in studio, ESPN's DJ Bienemé. DJ, they lost. I think the consensus is this is a game that, while there were some calls that were certainly frustrating, this is a game that when you get sacked 8 times, when, as you posted, C.J. Stroud's getting pressured more than any quarterback outside of Tim Tebow since they started measuring pressures, and when your special teams have the worst day, I think, that we've ever seen them have under Frank Ross, that all adds up to losing on the road against the two-time defending Super Bowl champions.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was probably most disappointing. I think, in all honesty, the special teams probably had the biggest culprit in losing the game.
Yep.
Could think about it. Two missed field goals, missed extra point. That's literally 7 points. And you gave up 3 to start the game.
Right. You know what I mean? Because of the big kick return. So that's 10 points total from your screw ups on special teams.
Right. Like we can talk about, you know, the O-line letting CJ get, you know, blistered. We could talk about, you know, not stopping Travis Kelce. There's so many things we could talk about. D'Amico punting on 4th and 10. But the biggest takeaway, and it's, you know, not a lot of people have like really like harped on it, was special teams. Like that's, as you said, 10 points. And you lost by 9. Granted, it was, you know,
the safety.
But in reality, right. So you lost by 11. Whatever. That is how thin the margins can be. And I think that's been the underlying issue for the Texans throughout the year is against the better teams, the margin for victory is always going to be smaller, and they just struggled at executing against those teams when the margins were so thin.
And it's funny, too, because you take a look at the Chargers game where they block a punt and they block a field goal and, extra point, and they return it for 2 points. I mean, to go from that week and then 7 days later to do what they did there, it does make me wonder about something that I've kind of been feeling all year with this team. They did seem to get awful proud of themselves a lot, whether it was going into the year or some of the performances that they had that were good. And it felt like they didn't do a very good job of recentering and refocusing on a week-to-week basis, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I would say, in my opinion, their biggest issue, I felt like, was their inability to travel. Because at home, they were really good. You know, even though offensively they had their clunkers, but defensively, the only game where they gave up, I believe, over, let me see if my math is correct, probably over 24 might be the Ravens game.
Right.
I lied. There's a Lions and Ravens game, but the Lions game, they had 5 interceptions.
5 interceptions, right.
So really, that was more an offense. So I would say, to me, it's the inability to travel, right? Because on the road, the defense and the special team, all that, it just wasn't, it didn't feel as succinct. It didn't feel as crisp. You know what I mean? So I would say, not necessarily they were feeling themselves, but their inability to translate what they're doing at home and do it on the road.
What do you make of the inability to do things on the road, the special teams falling apart, the penalties that were a problem from week one through the end of the season? Like, the overall, like, discipline of the team seems off this year.
Yeah.
Like, why do you think that is?
That's a good question. I think just the lack of not enough attention. I feel like they do a decent job of being attentive to detail. But I think that their attention to detail to the maximum capability just wasn't as sharp as it needs to be. And I think that comes with a young head coach. Because, I mean, again, D'Amico's only been coaching in, I think, the 7th year coaching. So, you know, I would kind of chalk it up to that in that aspect. So that's kind of my viewpoint there is, like, you know, there's just an inexperienced coaching staff. Because, again, D'Amico's a second-year head coach. Bobby is a second-year offensive play caller ever. You know what I mean? Like, there is – I guess this year was a year where you saw a lot of – I guess, you know, bumps and bruises, inconsistencies, because now they're also having to figure out how to adapt to how teams are now attacking them in year two. And I feel like at times the smaller fine details could kind of slip away.
You mentioned Bobby Slowick a moment ago. DJ Bien-Aimé of ESPN with us in studio right now here on ESPN 97.5, 92.5 on YouTube at ESPN Houston, on Twitch at ESPN 97.5. At the end of season press conferences, it was interesting to hear the difference in answers from first D'Amico Ryans, who gave a short answer when asked about where Bobby Slowick progressed this past season, and then CJ Stroud, who was asked in detail about Slowick and seemed to have his back. Bobby Slowick has had the one interview virtually with the New York Jets for their head coaching position. He also, and now Aaron Glenn has that job, he also is interviewing, I guess, with the Jacksonville Jaguars, who have just moved on from Trent Baalke. Do you feel like Bobby Slowick will be here next year? Because I felt in our conversations this year, we've been of, I think, the belief that he will be back for next season. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people were focusing on what D'Amico said when asked about him, and they thought that that short answer that he gave spoke volumes about his position here right
well,
now.
Well, to add context, to start off the presser, he said that he's going to take a week to evaluate the coaching staff.
That's true.
So I think that once he says that, because it's kind of similar to like when he talks about injuries and things of that nature, like once he makes that declarative statement that this is how he views it, like I'm going to, you know, take the week to evaluate the staff, No matter what anybody asked afterwards, he was going to give a pretty short answer, especially regarding Bobby in that regard. Now, I would say that it wasn't a ringing endorsement because he also said within the press conference that offensively we need to improve. So what does that look like? You know what I mean? So, I mean, the O-line coach probably won't be back anyway. I mean, how much more change do you do, you know? Do you fire Bobby and then... Here's my only thing about firing Bobby. Like, does D'Amico have the coaching tree to dig into to grab a legitimate replacement?
Is Gerard Johnson not a legitimate replacement?
I wouldn't say he's not a legitimate replacement, but he might be gone. He might end up.
That's true too.
We might end up with the Jets.
Right. That's the rumor.
Aaron Glenn, you know, might bring him as OC. I think that for this situation, you can't go with a first time play caller in year three. I think that you got to kind of strike with iron's hot. So I would say you're better off just trying to get, if you're going to fire Bobby, get somebody that's more experienced, or, you know, just keep him.
I think the name that people are most intrigued by right now, at least it seems like with like fans and even the people who just like talk about the Texans every day, mm-hmm. it seems like the, you know, because he's now shown he's willing to coach under one of his former players. Chip Kelly decided not to be a head coach in college anymore. He stepped down he moved down to an OC position. Like, do you think that's something that they would consider, is going to the Chip Kelly route, you know, who D'Amico played for in Philadelphia? Or do you feel like his tree is more limited to what he's done in the NFL?
Yeah, it's more limited to what he's done in the NFL.
Okay.
I think it's more limited to that. So, I mean, he would probably have to poach off of... He could maybe poach off of Miami staff and try to get their OC who doesn't call plays. Maybe try to get a Rams guy. Mike LaFleur, who he spent time with in San Fran, who was coaching under Sala in New York. I think in my opinion, Mike LaFleur probably has a higher ceiling. He's a little more creative than Bobby, mainly because what I saw him do in New York, his offense was putting up 400 yards of offense with Joe Flacco. There was actually a stretch where in 2021 where Zach got hurt, Mike White had his first start. He threw for 400. Then Mike White gets hurt against the Indianapolis Colts on a Thursday night game. First quarter, throwing the touchdown, Josh Johnson steps in. He throws for over 300. I think they all have over 400 yards of offense. But Josh Johnson, they don't run it back with him. And then they go with Joe Flacco, I believe. Eventually, I think Mike White comes back against the Bills. They get crushed. But then next week, they go against Joe Flacco, against the Dolphins. Joe Flacco throws for over 300 yards. So he's shown the capability. Then Zach gets back out there and the offense stinks. So, but we all understand that, you know, that was that. But he's shown an ability that he can do more or less. So I'm curious to see. And now he's been with Sean McVay, too. So that also is going to open his horizon of other ways how to attack defenses, because Bobby was so stuck on outside zone, outside zone, outside zone, outside zone, that they finally went duo inside zone against the Chargers and the Chiefs, and they had way more success, right? Just being able to have multiple tools in your bag. And, again, that's what your O-line was better at blocking anyway. Things that were more gap scheme, things that were more inside zone, duo, things of that nature.
Not putting tight ends on good pass rushers.
Well, that's different. A lot of teams do that.
I'm just being an a-hole.
You know, a lot of teams do that.
A lot of teams do it, but, like, also...
It feels like the Texans, when they do it, it spectacularly backfires. Yeah,
the issue is... So, issue, Dalton played a crap game. Like, we could call that straightforward. In terms of blocking, like, his effort wasn't good enough. Like, there was one play where he was supposed to – it was, I think, one of the plays – it might have been Carl Office, but somebody, I think, beat Blake Fisher. And, like, Dalton was supposed to chip the guy, and he didn't even chip him. Like, he just silly-landy tapped him and then, like, ran off into his route. You know what I mean? And I'm just like, come on, Dalton.
I know what you're talking about. I've never heard that said before, but I get it.
I just made it up.
I like it.
But, again, like – like he had a really bad game in that aspect. But again, like there were some times where Steve Spagnuolo was affecting their pass protection rules and was setting up the one on ones with Dalton and George Kalafis. You know what I mean? And then the other sack that Dalton gave up, I mean, to be fair to him, they should have called a timeout. They are rushing. Like if you want to go for it on 4th and 10, even though they shouldn't have, they should have punted. Honestly, the defense was playing very, very well. You should have punted. Because the thing is, if you punt it and you get a 3-and-out, which they actually literally got the very next drive, they got 3-and-out. When they punt, it was cold out there. Like, it was legitimately cold. It was windy. You're probably going to get the ball back in midfield. Anyway, so, you know, I think that was D'Amico. Like, and that's, again, when you play against the Chiefs, you feel like you got a square. You know what I mean?
And that situation was so rushed.
Yeah.
I'm glad they didn't call a timeout. They needed all their timeouts there. But, yeah, I thought at that point they should have just taken the delay. Try to draw them off sides or something like that. But, okay, that decision, they ultimately don't make it. I want to go back to something, though. You were just talking about the offensive line a little bit ago.
Yeah.
Why did they decide to put Shaq Mason back in for Juice Scruggs?
Apparently Juice was a little banged up.
Okay, because he was on the injury report leading up to the game. It did feel like the offensive line was better on Saturday against the Chargers than it was the week afterwards. Obviously, totally different defensive lines and personnel. But the Chargers have a lot of really good linebackers and Joey Bosa and
Klimak.
He's part of like all that linebacker core and all that. But I would say for the Chiefs, definitely on the interior with Chris Jones, a little bit of a different story.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's fair criticism. I think because Shaq hadn't played in like a whole month, actually, literally, because I think they played on the 19th and then they played the playoff game on the 17th or something like that. Mm-hmm. So like it makes sense. Oh, they actually played on the 18th, but regardless, it's fair criticism to like say he should have still went with Juice. At that point, since Shaq wasn't good this past season, but I still don't think that's not necessarily what cost, like them putting Shaq in isn't necessarily what cost them. I think what really cost them was their simplistic pass protection game plans that they had to rely on throughout the entire year because they couldn't do anything intricate is what at the end of the day cost them. Because Steve Spagnuolo heated up CJ in the fourth quarter. He just blitz. You know what I'm saying? And was able to get to him a decent amount of times. You know what I mean? And, you know, that was that. I think, you know, also, like, this is one of those games that losing Steph and Tank showed up big time. Because they were doubling Nico on a lot of routes. Like doubling him. And leaving, you know, Mech and Xavier one-on-one to do whatever. You know what I'm saying? I think if you have Steph, like, or even Tank, they can't double Nico like that.
And Hutchinson had a couple of mistakes early, and poor Jared Wayne getting out there. Just two catastrophic plays. I feel bad for him.
Yeah.
He shouldn't have been thrown into that spot. And, like, you get thrown into that spot twice in Kansas City against defending Super Bowl champs.
Right.
So, okay, we talked about Bobby Slowick. The expectation is offensive line coach Chris Strausser is going to retire. It would be interesting if the Texans kind of go into this offseason and there's no at least on paper accountability for some of the shortcomings of the offense. Because if he retires, it's kind of convenient. You don't
especially
have to
if
be
they
mean.
Promote within.
Right.
Yeah. They can promote within.
TJ's eyes wide.
You don't think Cole Popovich? Like, you know? Greg's kid?
He was right there. He was right there.
Son of a winner.
That's what I said. Like
he was
like,
right there, yeah. And I said, that'd be a horrific. But if they did that, that would, again, speak to D'Amico's coaching tree, who can he actually pull? How much clout does he have to convince guys to come work for him? Right? That's what this, because Brian Flores ran into that in Miami, right? By the end, like by going, actually, it's crazy. So obviously, after 2022, like, the reason why they had to go with a two offensive coordinator, co-offensive coordinator system is because nobody wanted to work for him. You know what I mean? Like, people did not want to work on the offense.
Not surprising, with given the stories we hear about him, especially with Tua's story and all
exactly.
that.
Exactly. So, like, that's, you know, granted, Brian Flores, D'Amico, different situations, and obviously it'd be different reasonings. But again, like, if you can't nail that side of the ball, it doesn't matter who you have at quarterback, right? Like, you're going to struggle. You know what I'm saying? So, they do have to. And then with the O-line, so they know they couldn't, back to Miami, since they couldn't, you know, figure out the offensive coordinator, they also couldn't figure out the O-line situation because Brian Flores would fire guys left and right. I think he had like four off O-line coaches in like 2.5 seasons. They hired somebody that was like an assistant line coach, just like the guy we're discussing. And the Dolphins in 2021 had arguably one of the worst offensive lines in NFL history.
Whoa.
You know what I mean? So, yep. Like, because so much of O-line play is about O-line coaching, right? Like, it's a little different than a lot of other positions. Where, like, talent reigns supreme. Because most of the guys on the O-line are usually talented enough. You just got to coach it up. You know what I'm saying? That's why Mekhi Becton can look like a bust in New York and then go to Philly, obviously, albeit a new position, at right guard, and get all pro votes. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So a lot of it is coaching.
Do you expect any other changes within the staff or just, like, the structure of the Houston Texans outside the players this year?
Yeah, nothing like jaw-dropping, in honesty. Nothing jaw-dropping. Like, it's really, like, about Bobby because, like, some people up top, like, some people, like ownership and whatever, they've kind of put Bobby's feet to the fire. So it's really, like,
How involved are they? No. Because they used to be very involved, obviously.
That's a good question. They're not meddling owners, but they're not stupid owners. You know what I'm saying? Like, you still have to, like, make sure the plan makes sense. They're not like Shad down in Jacksonville. Like, obviously, Shad. It took so many people saying, we're not going to work for Trent Baalke, for him to be like, you know what? Maybe we should go separate ways. You know what I mean?
And they didn't even get rid of him. It's like mutual parting of ways, a respectful mutual parting of ways. They added that into that when they put the statement out there.
Yeah.
Some off-season decisions to make. Is Stephon Diggs back next season?
Man, that's tough because you're going to be 32 next season, coming off a major knee injury. Obviously, he turns 32 in November, late November, so towards the back end of the season. He tore his ACL in October. So, really, for a guy like him at his age, he probably will be back to normal-ish by, you know, October. But the thing is, like, as a receiver, man, that position, if we don't talk about it as much, because, like, running backs is a way more polarizing discussion. And, like, you know, people can get their bars off. But receiver, once they cross 30, like, they fall off cliffs fast, too. You know what I'm saying? Like,
look at Odell Beckham Jr.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I remember, like, the touchdown against the Jets that, you know, the Dolphins threw it through in overtime, like, to Jonnu Smith. I remember Odell ran, like, a route, and, like, he's running, like, a whip route. It looked like he had a piano on his back. He was moving so slow. No, like, for real, it looked like he was running with, like, size 26 cleats on. That's how slow he was moving. But, like, it happens fast at the receiver position. Like,
and you can't know until he's on the field.
Like, did anybody think Julio Jones, when he went to Tennessee, was going to look like, you know, basically as washed as you could possibly be? You know what I'm saying? So, like, at the receiver spot, they age really fast once they cross 30, 31. And he'll be 32, so I think I could see them, if they can get back on a team-friendly deal, but if it's too expensive, they're going to just be like,
Stroud did endorse him for what it's worth, so it will be interesting to see on that front. But yeah, I mean, shoot, Andre Johnson, Bill O'Brien famously told him, yeah, we don't think you're going to be more than a 40-something catch guy, after they eventually let him walk to, the Colts.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what he was the next season. It is crazy how quickly it goes. We touched on Stephon Diggs. Derek Stingley says he wants to be here forever.
That's gonna be interesting.
Is he gonna get paid? Given Nick Caserio's never done the 4-year deal with anyone yet, you would think that he would be looking for more than 3 years. You take a look at all those contracts. It is interesting. Like, Caserio deal is always 3 years.
I'm wondering if this is where they make the exception, because this is, I guess, Caserio's first real guy.
Yeah.
Outside of Nico Collins. But like with Stingley, that is a big-time decision, the top 10 pick, you know?
Yeah, I would say with Stingley, I know they're going to for sure, his camp is for sure going to want to get a deal done. It's just really about, can they get to the number that they want? You know what I mean? So I think it's kind of simple as that. And if they can come close to the number that they probably want, then you could probably get something done. But it's going to be interesting offseason because they don't have to do anything. But Stingley's agent is David Mugueta. And he will most definitely convince him to hold out. No doubt about that. You know what I'm saying? So we'll see how that situation goes. They got to figure out. So the three biggest contracts they got to figure out this offseason, because they only have $10 million in cap space. With only $10 million, you can't redo that much. So they have Laremy Tunsil with a cap hit of $28 million. They got to figure that out. Danielle Hunter of 23, and Titus Howard at 23, right?
One of those is three is not like the others.
So if they cut Titus, they will only save $2 million in debt. Yeah. Dang. Because they restructured it last year. So when you kick the can down, when you restructure, you're trying to win now. You know, if it doesn't work out, you're going to pay the piper, right? So I would say they got to figure out his situation. Obviously, they got to figure out Laremy's situation. Obviously, Neil, you don't worry about that. Like, you know, if anything, they could just extend to Neil.
I think they shouldn't do that.
Lower his cap number, and then that'll be that. Like, you could probably gain, like, $20 million in cap space or close to that if you just restructure his deal or extend it. Same with Laremy. Laremy, it won't be, that hard because they did before. It's just that if you extend him, I mean, if you restructure – then his cap is going to probably be damn near $40 million next year. And at that point, now you got to make a decision, trade or extend. So we'll see about that. And Titus, him being at a cap hit of 23 is not feasible. So they got to make a decision. Do they want to, restructure, extend, and lower his cap hit and convince him to play guard or trade him? So, you know, he's prepared either way. Like, he's prepared either way, whether to be traded or to be here. So I think that it's really just going to come down to what they decide in that respect. Because they do have to rebuild the interior of the offensive line. If you want to move Titus to left guard, that's fine. But you still got to figure out your center and right guard spot and leave Blake at right tackle. But then again, I feel like, man, they should have open competition. Every single spot should be open for competition except left tackle, period. Like, Laremy was the only guy that played towards his contract, because even though he had the penalties, he was still top 10 in so many metrics, whether it's pressure rate allowed, whether it was sack percentage, whether it was pressure rate or sack percentage. Like, he was top 10 in every single category, which is why he got all pro votes. So
do you feel optimistic about the future of the Texans next year? Do you expect more of the same going into next season, 10 wins and a wild card 3:30 Saturday win, lost in the divisional round? That's all we know. What's your view right now, before free agency, before the draft, on what the Texans will look like next year?
So I'm somewhat optimistic because that defense is so great. I think in year three they'll be even better. I think that if they can just improve the safety spot, that defense is going to be insane next year. Because it's going to be Kamara in year two, Derek in year four coming off of All-Pro, Kalen Bullock in year two, probably a better tackler, find some DTs. The defense is going to be absolutely insane next year. So, I still have, Petrie, if you stay healthy, and a nickel. I'm pretty, the defense is good enough to get you to the division title again. But offensively, that you got to figure out. They got to figure out,
a lot.
Who can be the OC? You got to find two receivers. So the O line is funny.
Yeah. With the offensive coordinator, offensive line, receivers. Yeah. It's everything.
Tight end.
Stroud and Mixon. Yep. And Nico Collins.
I know everything they invested in last season. Yeah. Tight end, yeah. Receiver, O line.
Because I think just the performance that Dalton put out was just
his contract sucks.
It's not the worst. You can get out of it. It's not that bad. It's just that last game was was not to his standard.
You said Odell looked like he was running with the piano on his back. Dalton has looked like that since week one.
Yeah.
He looks like
he's
early.
Walking out there.
Yeah.
Which I expected him to drop because he dropped that third nine pass in the first Texas Chief game.
Yeah. No, that's fair. I think, you got to figure out that spot because, like, Brevin's come up to an ACL. Cade didn't really show you much. So, like, and tight end is a slower build. So, I mean, you got to figure out that position. 4 out of 5 offensive linemen. You got to find a backup for Joe because, you know, Joe's going to be older. So, you know, So, and you got to find 2 new receivers. So,
okay. Only that.
Yeah, so to answer your question, optimistic. I'm half glass full, but I'm not necessarily like overly optimistic because like they don't have that many avenues to like make all those moves because you only got $10 million in cap space. If you only got $10 million, that ain't a lot, you know. So I'm granted they can create a lot, but you know, can they go and get some of the offensive guards that are going to be available, like a Mekhi Becton or a Tevin Jenkins? That those guys be
really you don't
good.
Want him.
Who?
Tevin Jenkins, he stinks.
Nah, he's smooth on the interior.
When he plays.
The Bears, y'all issue is y'all quarterback stinks.
Tevin Jenkins didn't play this year.
For sure. But Tevin Jenkins, like when he's on the field, like he's smooth. But like the Bears, y'all issue is like.
We're not talking about that. We're talking about Tevin Jenkins.
Yeah, I get that. But, you know.
I like what you're talking about. Dude.
Yeah, like the Bears. Like
you don't have Drake May, not a problem there. But
yeah, Caleb Williams was just, you know. Anyway,
yeah,
I know. Yeah,
I've heard.
So I think So anyway,
sky's falling, and everyone should just
if they could just improve the interior offensive line, get one receiver, then they'll be in a better spot. So I'm half glass full. I'm just not overly optimistic because the venue.
It's the most depressing half glass full I've ever heard.
Yeah, but it's not. They're not that bad of a spot because, like, in reality, like. If the special teams doesn't pee down their pants, maybe they win the game.
Maybe. And if the refs don't go against them too, maybe they win.
Well, that's hilarious, you know. I enjoy that because, like, for me, when players say stuff like that, I'm like, thank God.
There's something else to talk about.
It's going to be easy. It's going to be easy work day, easy writing day, like, easy peasy. Just blame the refs.
You hear Mahomes said I shouldn't have flopped.
That's cool. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, hey, when players, I always love when players give, you know, good quotes because, like, you make our day easier. And D'Amico's probably the worst quote out of all. Like, the only time D'Amico was good was, like,
Aziz Al-Shaair.
All right, there we go. You know, make my job easier. Everything else, oh, my God. It's just, like, it's dreadful. It's like, you know.
Well, we hope that they make your job easier the next couple of weeks by doing things that actually make them better on offense.
They should do nothing for like the next couple of weeks, so I don't have to do anything. I would greatly appreciate it.
But if
that.
They do something, DJ Bien-Aimé will be able to fill you in at ESPN.com, your Houston, Texas beat reporter. DJ, it was fun. We'll do this around free agency. We'll do it around the draft. What a year.
What a year. As you said before we got on, it wasn't a failure, but it was a disappointment.
Not a failure, but a disappointment. Mm-hmm. Like going to a sushi restaurant is expensive. I'm still hungry.
Sushi's good, though.
Sushi is good, though. I agree. Yeah. We like that take. All right. I'm going to be playing flag football with him on Monday. Hopefully, it'll
clear
my head. It's Kalani
George.
No,
he won't. He'll flake out.
Kalani George, stay put.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Stand! Hush!
Tackling the biggest news in the NFL.
This just in.
With Paul Gallant and Joe George. The 10-minute drill starts now.
Football time. I'm getting such a kick out of this. I'm laughing so hard, much like I did yesterday, at the possibility of the Dallas Cowboys moving on from Mike McCarthy for Brian Schottenheimer. Cowboy fans can be insufferable. I don't think they've been that insufferable in the last few years. For them to get this thrust upon them, it is really, really funny. But I do, as somebody who roots for a team that, you know, won 6 Super Bowls, but that's a little bit more back in the past. Like, I get it. Like, it sucks to go from being the best to being the worst. But also as someone who covers a 2-time defending division title team,
mm-hmm.
I really feel for these poor people. Perhaps we need to set up a GoFundMe for Dallas Cowboys fans with Brian Schottenheimer likely the next head coach.
Yeah, Justine Anderson said that they're starting to tell people that there's no more, that they're not getting second interviews. They spent 5 hours with him yesterday. They're spending more time with him today. I don't think it's a possibility. I think it is happening. I mean, this just is. I can't believe they're going to do this. I don't know. I don't get the purpose of it. Like what? Like you think that like bringing in Schottenheimer, it's just continuity like they talked about? Like you're the Dallas Cowboys, and like this is the move that you're going to try to make?
It's not like this is a year where the offense did particularly well either. Obviously, there were some injuries that affected that, and they were perhaps hamstrung by their running back situation on top of that. And their offensive line isn't the offensive line that it used to be that long ago. But to go from Brian Schottenheimer, the offensive coordinator on a team run by Mike McCarthy, which makes you think that there's going to be a lot more Mike McCarthy input on the offensive side of things than, you know, you'd get from, say, like D'Amico Ryans here.
Yeah.
And now this guy's running the whole thing. I would just say from an optics and vibes perspective, like that guy better be amazing behind the scenes because it is an absolute season killer to move into this year with this guy, at least as far as excitement, buzz, all the things that Jerry Jones cares about more than I would say the majority of NFL owners. But this is the kind of thing that a mediocre organization does. This is like the Titans hiring Mike Mularkey, Mike Munchak, Brian Callahan. The guys that they bring in, like that's not what the Cowboys should ever do. And I get it. Like Jason Garrett wasn't the biggest name. But to settle for a retread coordinator in his first gig as a head coach, not Kellen Moore and not anyone else who's been around the organization for a while. It's a very strange move. And I almost wonder, like, are the Jones family, are they running out of money? Like, what's going on here?
Especially when, like, you think about the way the players were so pro-McCarthy. Like, you're going to have Michael Parsons and all these guys who are so... And like, that's a guy who could easily demand a trade. It's not done yet, but it feels like it's a done deal that Schottenheimer's going to be the coach of the Cowboys.
All reporting is pointing that way. Yeah, Cowboys beat Josina Anderson. And I think everyone's stunned collectively.
Yeah, because it just doesn't make any logical sense.
Yeah, I'm really struggling to find how you sell the son of Marty Schottenheimer.
People are saying McCarthy is the better hire. Just keeping McCarthy.
Yeah.
Like that's where you're at.
Because it is.
No, 100%.
He's like, done the job before. They had 3 12-win seasons with McCarthy. For all the playoff faults, they won games here. This is a first-time head coach and it's a rather underwhelming coordinator. So, he better be great behind the scenes, but this does feel like best-case scenario, you have another Jason Garrett.
Yes. Great. Best-case scenario, you have another Jason Garrett. I don't know. And it's not like this guy's having prolific offenses. Like, it's not like they have Ben Johnson on their staff. I mean, this reminds me of Dirk Cutter, in a way. Like, when Dirk Cutter became the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers because, you know, that he was the hotshot candidate, so they fired Lovie Smith, and they promoted Dirk, and it was a disaster. Like, this seems like that times 10.
Yeah, this would be a bad move by the Cowboys, but it is fun to watch the car crash.
And it is.
The flames from afar. We found out the finalists for the 2024 NFL Awards yesterday, and guys, there are no Texans anywhere. None. Coach of the Year, no D'Amico Ryans. Dan Campbell, Kevin O'Connell, Sean Payton, Dan Quinn, Andy Reid. Assistant Coach of the Year, no Bobby Slowick. Bills OC Joe Brady, Eagles defensive coordinator Vic Fangio, Vikings defensive coordinator Brian Flores, Lions defensive coordinator Aaron Glenn, Lions offensive coordinator Ben Johnson. No Texan in defensive player of the year, no Texan in offensive rookie of the year, and surprisingly, since they, I think, had at least two possibilities, no defensive rookie of the year. That group is Quinyon Mitchell from the Eagles, Rams defensive lineman Braden Fisk, Eagles cornerback Quinyon Mitchell, Dolphins linebacker Chop Robinson, and Rams linebacker Jared Verse. Kamari Lassiter and Kalen Bullock, one of those two I think should have been there. Obviously, I am biased and have not watched any of those other players. I think I listed Quinyon Mitchell twice
there.
They
listed him twice. Yeah, it's Cooper DeJean.
Cooper DeJean. Yeah. Oh, so both of their corners made it?
Yeah, both their corners, both Rams defensive linemen. I also think I thought Derek Stingley Jr. would make top five for defensive player of the year.
I would have thought that too, but they generally do not put corners in that conversation. But they did put Pat Surtain the second in there.
This is one of those where I'm not going to pretend like I watch all these games and are keeping an eye on rookie corners and safeties. But I assumed Lassiter would be in there with the performance that he had.
From the beginning. I mean, he won the starting gig in the offseason. I'm with you there.
Every grade that got put out in terms of pass catch rate and PFF grade and the interception numbers were bigger than both those guys combined. It seemed like he was a lock to at least finish in the top five. But you know what? Motivation. Motivation for next year. The disrespect. Where's Frank Ross for assistant coach of the year? Is the regular season?
Well, I'm glad. You know what? With the way the last game went, I'm totally cool with that. Yeah, it's one of those things where the timing of the awards being given out, it almost feels like they were watching Eagles Rams.
Yeah, right.
But I know that that's not how it went down. I know that the voting actually takes place at the end of the year. But Lassiter, I mean, the guy's been starting since day one. Other news, these are some stories we didn't touch on the last couple of days, but the Colts hired ex-Bengals defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo as their defensive coordinator, and the Vikings gave Kevin O'Connell a long-term deal. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the Tennessee Titans situation at general manager seems like an absolute mess. So they hired Mike Borgonzi, who was the assistant general manager with the Chiefs. He gets to pick the players, but supposedly he doesn't have the final say. That belongs to Titans president of football operations, Chad Brinker, who already was there. And Brinker's going out there flexing at press conferences and saying, we're not going to pass on generational talent. All right, cool dog. Titans situation seems as messy as it was before.
Yeah, you hire a GM and you're not going to give him the final say. What'd you hire the guy for? Also,
to do the work for the guy who's going to have the final say.
Why would you take that job, dude? You are the assistant GM of the Kansas City Chiefs. There are going to be other jobs to take. But you're not going anywhere.
You get the title. Once you get the title once, you're generally a made man in this profession.
But where is Brian Gain at?
He is an assistant with
a
playoff team. Right.
He's back with Buffalo.
Yeah, so
his career is back to where it was before.
But, I mean, he has that in his back pocket and probably can ask for a little bit more as an ex-general manager.
And he did interview for the Jets job. So, it was, you know, but then again, the Jets interviewed a lot of people. Good luck to the Titans fans out there. Not really. They kind of piss me off, so.
I hate Titans fans. They're annoying online, and they all should be, they should have this situation rubbed in their face.
I do like that he's like, we're not going to pass on generational talent. Cool,
man.
I mean, that means to me, like, you're not.
Thanks. I'm sure that's your edge. The other teams are going to pass on them.
Honestly, what you should do is not say anything, because what happens when you accidentally pass on generational talent? Having the number one overall pick is not the easiest place to be. Especially if you're changing things in your front office going into the year.
It felt like to me like that's them saying, we're not taking a quarterback just to take a quarterback. I feel like that's what he meant to say.
To take Travis Hunter and no matter what?
Take Abdul Carter, Travis Hunter, like whoever
Travis
you think
Hunter,
it
no
is.
No matter what. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know who else you want to use the word generational for. It's a stupid word.
Yeah, the word gets used a lot.
It does. I think Lance was going back and forth with someone last night where someone was like, there's no generational talent in this draft. And Lance was like, yeah, there shouldn't be. He was like, there's been like three ever if we're actually doing generational talent.
Yeah, it's a dumb word. And I know, Paul, like, you've ripped on Trevor Lawrence and Caleb Williams for being called generational. And
people bring that up with the quarterbacks all the time. And look, they can be that. I just think every year, and this is why every single year that I'm in this field and I see the people that are so excited about the draft, I just say a lot of the work that gets done before the draft becomes completely void once the season begins. And also, maybe I'm a pessimistic, cynical a-hole for looking at it like this, but when I look at young quarterbacks going into a draft class, I say about all of them, they're probably not the guy. Mm-hmm. And if you say that before you take these guys, you actually do give yourself the ability to potentially unplug
if things do not work out so well. So, like, going into the draft where they had the possibility of drafting Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, Will Levis, who was talked up like a top 10 prospect, and all the other quarterbacks in that year's draft class, just go into it saying, yeah, it's probably not going to be the guy, because he's probably not going to be the guy. And if you put these guys on pedestals before they've even played a snap, you're only going to be disappointed.
Yeah, because I feel like I see like one like generational player for me in college football, and that's Jeremiah Smith, the freshman wide receiver at Ohio State. He seems like the only guy who like belongs in that category.
He's generational.
It's like Adrian Peterson, because I feel like you have to like have like that impact as a freshman to like eventually become generational. But yeah, it's a stupid word, and I can't believe the Titans are already talking about this, and I can't believe the Titans are saying that they have a GM who doesn't have the final say. This is the same organization that traded away A.J. Brown, then fired Mike Vrabel because he flirted with the Patriots. They fired the GM who traded A.J. Brown because Mike Vrabel was pissed. This is going to end up in a disaster for them, and somehow they're still not the most dysfunctional organization in the division.
Yeah, that well,
it might be getting close.
I think it's pretty close between them and Jacksonville.
Yeah, I think they are like they are racing to join Jacksonville.
And the Colts are run by Jim Irsay. I mean, they're staying with Chris Ballard. I mean, there's no reason to stay with Chris Ballard after this year. This year was a massive disappointment for the Colts, given where they were last year.
The Titans and Jags, it's two different flavors of dysfunction of, do you want your ownership firing everybody all the time, or your ownership really having to like have their arm twisted to fire obvious obvious people that should be fired? Shout out to you, Trent Baalke. Hope you land on your feet.
I don't know if you will. I'm actually really curious. Like, will Trent Baalke land a job somewhere?
Yes.
Like, as, like, an assistant GM, even though, like, he is the ultimate cockroach. Like, yeah. Do I want this guy on my staff knowing that, like, there's probably a good chance he's going to replace me somehow?
Yeah. He's going to snake in the grass. He's going to whisper in the owner's ear and get to hire three coaches.
Don't draft Aiden Hutchinson.
I'm so glad he didn't do that.
Yeah, I am too.
Fine, but like,
I mean, Walker actually had a pretty good year this
year. Yeah, but Hutchinson is.
But Hutchinson is. Yeah, Hutchinson is the new J.J. Watt. Oh, Paul, you only said that because he's white. Yes, I did. That's why I said that. There you go. Also, Nick Saban said he'd coach in the NFL before taking another college job, and he brought up all the pitfalls of being a college coach these days.
What a world we could live in where Bill Belichick is the head coach at North Carolina, and then like, next year, Nick Saban is the head coach in Tennessee. I don't know.
What if the Bears had hired Nick Saban?
I've been fine with that.
What if the Patriots had hired Nick Saban? I would have been fine with that.
Yeah, I thought the interview was interesting that he did, because he talked about the doctor in Alabama or in Louisiana that cleared Drew Brees.
Yeah.
And then the team didn't clear him.
Right.
And then that doctor said, don't sign Dante Culpepper. He can't move ever again. And then the team signed Dante Culpepper. Like,
yeah, the Dolphins, right?
Yeah, like people give Nick Saban grief for that, and I'm like, you really don't think Nick Saban and Drew Brees would have worked in the NFL?
If Saban got a quarterback in the same way Sean Payton got a quarterback, I don't know. I think the proof is in the pudding that Saban's a damn good football coach.
Wait, you mean to tell me that Nick Saban's a better head coach than Sean Payton? That's what you're saying? Yeah. I do think it would have been hard for Nick Saban being in the AFC East. I don't think it would have been like winning a Super Bowl all the time. It would be maybe winning a division once in a decade.
I feel like Dolphin organizational incompetence would have gotten in the way of it.
Yeah.
And I feel like they still would have had their issues a la those Dolphins. Because the Dolphins would have like a frisky year every now and then back in the AFC East.
They won in 08. And right. I was like, yeah, they could probably still win in 08 when Tom Brady tears his ACL in week one. Like, I'll give them that.
The Ronnie Brown Wildcat years, where like they would beat the Patriots because they would use like all their ammo.
I think that was 08.
Oh, was that 08? Oh,
they did that to beat the Matt Castle Patriots.
Gotcha. Okay, I remember. But like, I just always felt like the Dolphins like would like unleash their entire bag of trick plays every year they played the Patriots, get one win, and then miss the playoffs.
Or they would just wait for Rob Gronkowski to be playing safety for some reason. They're just
I wasn't gonna bring that one up.
I mean, it's one of the iconic Dolphin wins over the last 20 years.
Yeah, whatever. You know, things happen.
It wasn't even like a Hail Mary situation.
Still think, who won the Super Bowl that year?
I don't know. The Rams?
Yeah.
Was that a Rams year?
Every time I go on
Philly?
Every time I go on TikTok, I'm getting these videos. I honestly don't know. I'm getting these videos, the Aaron Hernandez series, and I'm like contemplating watching it.
The Hulu one?
Yeah. They keep popping up on my TikTok. I'm like, it looks so bad. I might want to do it.
I might
hold off until like the summer. We'll see how the Astros season goes. We could do like weekly reports on the Aaron Hernandez series.
A year after it aired?
Yeah. Give us some time to breathe.
No spoiler. I mean, we can spoil away.
That's true. We do know exactly how it ends.
Mm-hmm.
So,
there you go. Scalon and George, ESPN 97.5, 92.5, 713-780-3776 to call, to text, on YouTube at ESPN Houston, on Twitch at ESPN 975. Huge win for the Rockets last night. Can they keep it going forward? We'll discuss and a lot more. Stay put.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.